That's the beautiful thing about complexity. Like you open one door and then 10 more doors open. You could go to any of these doors. You just don't know which door is going to lead to how many more doors. And in the end, it's this exponentiality of opportunities is a risk, but it's also, in my view, a hidden gem. A lot of things we could do to solve very big problems of today might be hidden behind one of these doors. And the more people participate, I think the more probable it will be that we find the solutions that really matter and move the needle.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Mindful Conversations. My name's Shamash, and I'm with...
Alvin, and we're here with Yip.
Yes, absolutely. My good friend Yip, who I first met in Plum Village quite a while back. So it's great to be back in touch with you, Yip.
Yes. Hi, Shamash. Hi, Calvin. Really enjoy being with you.
Wonderful. Yip is working with startups. She works in the AI space now. She's worked with technology for a while. Would you be okay to just introduce yourself briefly just to get us started? Yep.
Yeah, of course. I have three topics that I really care about in life. And now it's four with AI. But the first one is women empowerment. I think there's a lot to do for us to step up to our potential and contribute to business and society in the way we can fully thrive. Then the second one is well-being, which consists of two elements. And that's also how I met Shamash, exploring what does it mean to be, right? What's the art of being? And then what is the art of being well? What is like the guiding North Star in all of our lives? So that's well-being, my second favorite, or one of my top three favorite topics. And the third one is Web3. Web3 for me is the internet of value. Kind of how can we use technology as a force for good? And Web3 has been around for some time, and now we are at the intersection between AI and Web3. Everything is a bit new, so everyone's trying to understand how these two technologies can work together. I personally look into how these technologies can help close the gender equity gap, and in particular solving what we call complex problems are problems that are very big. There's a urgency to solve them, but the problem is they are not owned by anyone. There's no central authority that has the responsibility to solve these problems. And the simplest example is something like climate change, right? We are all kind of in danger of leaving this world in a place that does not look at all like when we came into it. However, it's like a complex problem, and it's not like one person can solve it, one government can solve it. We all have to work together. It's complex, difficult, urgent. And how do we do that? And I think technology can play a big role in providing answers and providing tools and opportunities to leave this wonderful world the way it is, or even make it more beautiful. However, we have to learn about it. And we also have to, in my view, incentivize people who are not yet contributing to developing the solutions to offer them a hand to join and build that world of tomorrow. So that's kind of what I'm doing.
Wonderful. And what about AI? What's your interest with AI?
Well, AI is like a tool, I would say. In general, for me, it's like a technological tool. You could think of it as a knife. And now we have this wonderful tool that has been developed over decades of research. Computer science research, mathematics. And now this tool is now at a stage where it can be made available at very low cost to literally anyone who knows how to use a computer or knows how to use a mobile phone. So the question is, what can it do that makes our lives easier? How can we use it? There are many, many open questions, but one cool thing about AI is, in my view, it helps me how do you say in English? I don't know. It supports my brain. AI could be considered a very good support for reasoning. Imagine we now three, we have a conversation. It's beautiful. AI can, in almost real time, transcribe and then provide the synthesis of all that has been said. And what it does is it provides, with this feature, it basically provides the opportunity for even those who don't have the best memory or those who have not spend countless of hours in school, in high school, or in university to write synthesis of reports, write certain skills. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, these skills, you don't need to learn anymore, but you can still get to the synthesis. And this is like so amazing, because imagine we can now tap into all these libraries of knowledge in the world, and we can very easily access that knowledge in a way we can understand it without having to go through 6, 8, 10, 12 years of studies. Painstaking. We have the opportunity to create a very equitable world of it, like providing access to many people that have been left behind before. However, at this very moment, you know, I think it's early, and we are seeing some risks, such as those who know how to use the technology are amassing wealth. Those who don't use the technology might be left behind. So what people call the technological divide might increase. The technological divide, when you think of technology being one of the main value drivers in business, right? Just looking at all these different rankings, the most valuable companies in the world are tech companies, probably 70-80% of the top 10. Then it means technological divide also will equal material divide, like wealth divide, wealth gap. And then a lot of problems might occur. And I live in Germany. I think 60 years ago, we already had the situation where, you know, technological divide or not technological divide, but wealth gaps and conflicts and so on led to a lot of, yeah, big problems. And I think we are at risk of going through similar societal disruption. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about saying, okay, instead of being a victim of all of this and technology taking over and those who have access to technology ruling our world and we get frustrated, how can we prevent that and invite everyone to join the party as it's still starting?
You just highlighted some risks there, you know, about technological divide and being similar to the wealth divide and things like that. Do you see that as a super important thing driving your own motivation now with the projects that you're doing? You know, I've read your amazing white paper as well, from Jedi Labs. So do you see like getting in at the ground level and trying to steer it being the most effective way of counteracting some of these risks that you just mentioned?
Yeah, there will be so many more risks than we can anticipate in this very moment, right? So we need a lot. The more connections there are, that's the beautiful thing about complexity. Right? You open one door and then 10 more doors open. You could go to any of these doors. You just don't know which door is going to lead to how many more doors. And in the end, it's this exponentiality of opportunities is a risk, but it's also, in my view, a hidden gem. A lot of things we could do to solve very big problems of today might be hidden behind one of these doors. And the more people participate, the more I think the more probable it will be that we find the solutions that really matter and move the needle open. You could go to any of these doors. You just don't know which door is going to lead to how many more doors. And in the end, it's this exponentiality of opportunities is a risk, but it's also, in my view, a hidden gem. A lot of things we could do to solve very big problems of today might be hidden behind one of these doors. And the more people participate, I think the more probable it will be that we find the solutions that really matter and move the needle to bring, I don't know, if you think about peace, to bring peace to certain conflicts, geopolitical tensions, or to identify solutions that really move the needle in terms of ocean warming or ocean pollution or climate change, right? So I think it's in the acceleration of this information exchange and then in the connecting of the right tools and little stepping stones that we have the opportunity to have big breakthroughs. And big breakthroughs means, you know, not 9 to 10 optimization, but really things we hadn't seen before. Black swans or white swans, if you were to think of on the more positive note. Mm.
You mentioned about women in tech, and you've got a startup, or there's an organization that you're part of to encourage, you know, women in technology and into Web3 and other stuff. What do you think is the next steps in that area to encourage more women to get into technology and using AI, and how would that be beneficial for society? Because I'm sure you believe it is.
when you think of capital allocation, people typically allocate capital to the networks they know of, products they know of, services they know of, right? So when we don't have women investors, then we don't make different capital allocation than we have done before. That's the number one. The second one is when we don't have women technologists or women entrepreneurs, then we're basically also leaving behind 50% of the talent pool. So it's super important that we bring people in. What I have noticed, though, is there's still a little bit of a systemic skill gap. When you look, and I can only speak about blockchain because that's where I was engaged for the past years of my life. And what we're seeing is when we go to the conferences, where in effect, in fast-moving industries, conferences are a hotspot for information exchange, right? Because when an industry is moving very fast, people don't have a lot of time to document all the new progress. So you want to go to the conferences so you can get the latest insights of what's happening in the industry. And also you need to be there in order to close the deals, and everyone is moving fast with the industry, growing with the industry. So your network also grows when you're at the conferences. What we have seen is there was not a lot of participation by women to go into these conferences for maybe the reason that one, technology seems unattractive and scary. People don't really understand yet what benefits it has, and then thereby kind of not willing to make the investment. It's expensive to go to New York. Like if you're in Munich, stay there, pay 2,000 euros conference tickets, and I don't know, 2,000 euros in hotels and so on, right? So there was not enough incentive. But when the women were not there, then basically they're not participating in an industry that is growing. And when they're not participating, they're not participating in the economic upside. That's the difficult thing. When you're not participating in the economic upside, you are always at the end of the value chain because you are not in the position to invest. Investing means also to shaping the technologies or the technological landscape. How much wealth can you accumulate when you just get a salary your entire life, compared to someone who like basically gets a salary plus and accumulates capital in investment? So the gap widens. Then we found out, okay, if we want to get more women to participate, then, you know, there's different ways to do so. We started with education. I built some of the most impactful education programs in blockchain just to teach technological and financial literacy. When you think about Internet of Value or blockchain, then mainly it was, how do you create incentive systems, which is kind of a financial way of thinking, coupled with technological understanding, right? So it's not only technology, it's technology plus economy plus finance and game theory. And then all of a sudden it already gets a bit complicated. So you have to teach by the roots. That's what we did. And then we noticed, oh, now we have a lot of women informed about blockchain and wanting to participate to close the gender gap, but they don't really have, you know, the funds to go to these conferences and build the networks, close the deals and be hired and build these companies. So we gave scholarships just at least enough to have enough incentive for people to go to these events. And then when they're going, like, we're opening the door. You still go through that door, but at least someone opened that door for you and made it attractive for you. And then people went to all these conferences. They participated in hackathons. They won them. And we knew supporting women just with very basic education, literacy, and basic means like a stipend to enter into that world is a very effective intervention. Then people won the hackathons and so on. And we noticed, oh, there's not a lot of investment going into women teams in blockchain. I think it was like 4% of the capital goes to women-led teams. Right? So there's still a gap. So how can we now create networks and so on that help women invest into women? The cool thing about emergent technology, in particular in blockchain, is the investment cycles are shortened. Typically in VC, you would have like 7, 8, 10 years with the investment and then exit. In blockchain, you could bring it down to 2 to 5 years. So capital, when a female founder exited or a female investor exited, then they can bring it back to the ecosystem. And then maybe, of course, they don't invest only in women, but more likely they will invest into more women projects than an average man. And so that's how you basically create these systemic change layers. And we noticed the next step is probably to combine siloed industries such as blockchain, where we have a lot of female devs or people entering, and they need to participate in these economies or industries at a faster speed than the average person, just to close the gap. But now when we can network, connect them with other women from other industries, such as AI, solving problems that they really care about, like climate change or, I don't know, poverty or education, then you have a very sweet niche where you combine like passion and skills and the network, the human element of it. And we thought, or we have seen, that this might be a very good place for people to grow very fast and build ventures that are investable. So that's why I'm organizing now a hackathon. We've done that already since a year, but now we are getting into the stage where we combine them cross disciplines.
Amazing. Thank you for giving that some color. You just mentioned education, and I know that's your Jedi Labs white paper that you shared, just so we know that it's j3d.ai, which is very cool and clever way of doing it. Harnessing the ethereal force for knowledge for the digital revolution. So this is all about education. Is that how you see AI helping to change the educational landscape and knowledge sharing? Because you also mentioned this kind of knowledge sharing that happens at these conferences and a way to capture and share that. Do you want to tell us a bit about that and how you see that future?
Yeah, maybe I can start with the vision of Jedi. But Jedi, basically, the inspiration for it came from Star Wars, right, where you have these group of people who are trained to tap into the Force and use their training to bring peace and prosperity, or keep the peace in the empire and protect against the dark forces. So we were like, okay, now we have this new technology, AI, quantum, cybersecurity, any kind of technology that comes in. We need people who really want to understand that technology and be trained at the level of excellence to use it for whatever they find is a good purpose to use it. And we don't want to be like, what is good and so on. I think that is for everyone to decide by themselves. But so how do we basically train these people? And that's the education piece. But the bigger vision is to say, what can we actually do to make collaboration more profitable than competition? The second question, or the underlying question, is what can actually be done to make peace more profitable than war? And so our hypothesis is that when you look at economy, when people start to collaborate with each other, own a stake in each other, then there's not really an incentive to destroy each other's work, right? There can be, of course, playful competition. It's like when you play a basketball game, you of course play against each other and it's fun. But the idea is, how can we play together in a way that the pie gets bigger for everyone, not only for us humans, but also for nature? The pie getting bigger doesn't mean like exploitative resources. There's many ways of growth, spiritual growth, inner growth, whatever growth you want to define, whatever is value, right? That's why I was so excited about blockchain or internet of value. And it was inspired by Bitcoin. That was, in my view, the first system that made it possible that cheating the system is less profitable than complying to the system. To basically take away that kind of enforcement, like a post-intervention enforcement, where you say, okay, now people do something bad and then we're going to punish them, because doing something bad, according to that rule of that system, Bitcoin, is not even an attractive solution or valuable for the stakeholders. And that kind of understanding and philosophy comes now to collaboration. Like, how can we make collaboration more profitable than competition? And collaboration means, how can you basically, when you look at 1 + 1, and you'd say 1 + 1 is not 2, but 1 + 1 would equal 3, or 1 + 1 equal 10, then there must be some kind of value in that plus, that collaboration. And until now, I think in economy, we haven't really looked in the spaces between, so in these plus, and collaboration has a value in itself. And so with Jedi, what we're doing is finding ways for people to connect in the most efficient way. We're using methodology from cybernetics, which is a discipline, subdiscipline of mathematics. The idea is to say, how can we set systems that self-regulate and optimize for certain parameters? When we talk about human collaboration, what we are optimizing for is information reverberation. So how can we exchange knowledge in a way that after each exchange, everyone knows what everyone else knows. So we can make collaboration more efficient. We don't have time to waste. And so that can be applied for conferences. And what the way we solve that problem is we transcribe what is being said. There's a lot of tools already out there. Then we synthesize what has been said and we feed that back into the discussion. We have a very strict protocol of convening. And then these transcripts, they are basically like the universal library of knowledge. When you get the best people together in a certain area, you synthesize what they said. You can reduce down the amount of time needed to consume new knowledge or learn new knowledge to like 10% of what is needed. And then you make that available for everyone as a public library. And of course, with using like blockchain mechanisms, you can even make, that's why we're Jedi with a three, because it's Web3 philosophy, to say, now we can even reward those who've contributed to creating the knowledge in a very cost-efficient way, because we can have all these smart contracts set up. Every public library or every piece within that public library is a smart contract that can automatically reward every contributor in most cost-efficient way possible. So these kinds of things can be built up at the moment at the stage of MVP, or like just building the very first infrastructure to making collaboration more profitable than competition.
Wonderful. What a wonderful aim. You talked, another passion of yours was well-being and being as part of well-being. How do you think AI can help us support improve our well-being and to help us connect to our own sense of being? And how do you think it could potentially hinder that? And what needs to happen in the future development of AI so it's supportive of human being and well-being?
Yeah. I think it's good to think of AI as a tool that supports us in, for example, discovering our blind spots. I mean, I can have all my data and emails and so on. I can feed everything into ChatGPT and ask them, what does it say about my patterns? What can you read out of it? Right? What are you seeing that I'm not seeing? It can be a coach that is available 24/7 to me. I have seen in my environment some people starting to delegate a lot of things to AI, even the thinking process in itself, and then just relying that whatever they put in, AI will take care of it. And they stop thinking critically about what they actually want out of the machine. Yeah, that makes me worry a little bit, because then at some point in time, we stop thinking. It's just a matter of how we use it. So we want to use it wisely, think about how can it serve us and our purpose. And that means we need to find our purpose. But AI can help with finding the purpose, probably even better than the average coach. There are a lot of tools already, I think, that provide something called personal intelligence, chatbots that help you dig deeper into your purpose. You can always prompt it to say, okay, can you ask the next question? Help me find my purpose. What do I need to do? The second thing is addiction, right? We are so getting used to short reward mechanisms because we have a problem and then we use technology to solve it immediately. But what it does is we get into that addiction for this feeling of reward, hormone-driven reward mechanisms.
Can I get addicted to? I can get addicted to asking AI for answers, and then it'll just suddenly start saying no, 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 no answers for you, mate. You keep coming back too much.
But I've been in these situations where, like, you don't know, internet and or ChatGPT doesn't work, and then basically people get very frustrated. That and we can say, yeah, it's just, you know, then you just chill and wait until it comes back. But what is behind the frustration is us being used to getting answers on the spot. And we unlearn creating the space for patience and for being okay with not knowing the answer. I mean, it's philosophical, but I think it's a really big issue when we train our biophysical system to get used to instant rewards, always knowing the answer.
Yeah. I actually asked a friend of mine, he's a writer for Substack, Never Stop Learning. He has a newsletter. And he posted something online and he said, we might be in trouble here. At the very least, we're going to need to adapt to a world that is being shaken to the core by AI chatbots. By the start of the autumn term, GPT-4 and the impending GPT-5 will be making its presence known. The temptation for students to use AI in their homework will be too much. He goes on a little bit, but then he asks a number of questions. And the reason why I'm thinking about this is because, one, he's got a question for you. I actually said to him, we'd be speaking to you. So we'll, if you have a question on education, but you also made me think about it doubly because you just mentioned critical thinking skills being at risk. So I think it is in line with what his questioning, you know, about do we need to have more essay writing in school? Should we ban AI and stuff like that? So as it comes to learning critical thinking education and what do we need for the future, his question to you is, he said he's interested in how we adapt education to prepare our young people for the world of work. And he sees that we would need to embrace AI in that future. Is it a change in mindset or a completely different skill set that is required now?
Oh, wow. In my view, everything is a skill. The mindset would be to embrace the change rather than resisting it. The skill set is, how can we create that space for adapting and create that space for resourcing ourselves when we are overwhelmed? Because it's like so much information coming into us, but that doesn't mean the information will stop, right? So we might find some ways to reduce information inflow, but on average, the information inflow will just be higher. Internet technologies, us being able to exchange information very fast with all the mobile phones and so on. So it's kind of like, it's not going to go backward. What can we do? We can improve our skills to filter, to center, to being here with ourselves, to be okay with a complex world, to embrace complexity. And that also means, wow, when I notice I'm overwhelmed, I can take a pause, take a breath, and get back. We will have different skill sets that will help set us up for success. The skill set will be curation. The skill set, I actually think, for example, essay writing. I would bet that kids nowadays can become, many more kids, like as a percentage than before, can become really good essay writers, because great essay examples are there, and you can also get personalized 24/7 feedback on your skills. Then basically you don't have to wait for the teacher after 3 weeks of vacation that they grade your essay, but you can already get 5 minutes after a better version, so you can continuously improve. And there's no harm in making all of us better essay writers, because then essay writing becomes a fundamental skill, like riding a bike. And then we can build upon that and do much more fun things. So I think it's more an opportunity than a threat, but the opportunity is contingent on our skill to be able to get back to the present moment.
Amazing. Nice. Last question from me is actually, listeners, they're into cultivating greater mindfulness, compassion, and wisdom, and then they're seeing all this growth of AI happening. How have you got any tips for them about, should they get more involved in AI? Should they take a bit more of a step back and cultivate their own kind of mindfulness and their own practices? What suggestions would you give for people going forward as this AI technology gets more powerful?
Learn about it and then make an informed decision, as in, do you want to befriend it or do you want to oppose it? But that's still a free choice. And maybe some people come to the conclusion it's such an existential risk that we should immediately stop engaging in it or even lobby for regulation to stop it. That's everyone's free choice. But for someone like who cares about mindfulness, one way to test and play around with this tool is to say, what would Thich Nhat Hanh answer to this situation? What would Ram Dass answer to this situation? What would Deepak Chopra answer to this situation? You have like everybody's wisdom. And of course, you need to be aware what are the limitations of the answers, also you can't take everything for granted. But in a sense, you can become the biggest spiritual student ever in such a short time. Or I'm experiencing ABC and meditation, what could I do? In order, like, why am I experiencing it? And then it would give you lots of different answers. And it doesn't mean that all these answers are correct, but it gives you inspiration for adjusting, right? And I think that's the beauty of AI, but also understanding how AI works, what are the ingredients, and then making an informed decision. where you want to be in that relationship towards AI.
Amazing.
Great advice. I'm going to ask myself, what would Yip do in this situation?
You know, part of during Jedi, we have basically the opportunity to have discussions commented. And when we talk about climate agreements, you could always ask, what would Mother Nature comment on your current status of discussion? Or what would the Dalai Lama think? Or what would that child that will graduate in 2050, living in that region XYZ that is threatened by desert storms or whatever, on your current discussion, what questions would they have for you? And that can serve as a way to make us reflect and maybe come to better answers in a continuous process. So it's like, I am very excited about the possibilities of AI, but I'm also very concerned about not enough people learning how to use it in the way that would serve them and not be overtaken by people who care about other things. But it's always
malevolent actors potentially could steal a march. So we need a whole activist of good intentioned mindfulness people transforming the AI landscape ASAP. Well, thank you so much. Thank you. Really, really grateful for your time, for your insights, your wisdom, and sharing all of the amazing work that you're doing. If anybody wants to check out what Yip's doing with Jedi, then it's j3d.ai. And of course, any further questions for us or our future guests, please hit us up at connect@mindfulconvo.com, and we'd be happy to put your questions to our guests. That's it from me. Anything from you guys before we close off?
Thank you very much. Don't know if you want to say anything about any of your future projects or any links that you want to share with us. We're happy to put them in the show notes.
Yes, I want to invite everyone to come to Munich and participate in this Sustainer Hackathon to use AI and Web3, quantum and technology, cyber security technology to solve SDG related matters. It would be a joy to host you in Munich September 21 to 23.